Welcome to Culinary Medicine Chats, where we talk with industry experts and learn about best practices and innovations in the field. I'm your host, Olivia Thomas. Hi, everyone. My name is Olivia Thomas, and I am a co-founder of Rewire Health, and I'm here today with Christina Badaracco. Welcome, Christina.
Hi, Olivia. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so excited for this conversation. Before we dive in, I'd love to hear more about you and your background.
Absolutely. So I am a registered dietitian by training, although I think a lot of my work and experiences are fairly unconventional in our field. I come from a background originally in undergrad in environmental science and biology. My first job out of college was at the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and I was really focused on water pollution and nutrient pollution, which a lot of it really comes from agriculture. And I'd say since I was a teenager, I've been really interested in a lot of the environmental issues around agriculture in our country. And I think kind of early in my career, also became interested in thinking about the human health implications. And that ended up directing me toward the path in public health and nutrition and dietetics. So I'm really interested in trying to help improve our food system, our food production in this country to improve human health and the health of our planet. So a lot of my experience in recent years has involved focusing on the Farm Bill and educating different audiences about what the Farm Bill is and how it affects what we grow in this country and how our health results from our methods of food production. Not as relevant, I guess, directly relevant to our conversation today. I also focus a lot in culinary medicine, and you and I work together in that space. But I'd say, again, in the agriculture space and sustainable agriculture, I'm really aiming to help healthcare providers to understand and know how they can take action to promote a healthier food and farm system in our country.
Wow, it sounds like you really do have a dynamic background. And I think your perspectives are really interesting, especially now with the food as medicine movement. A lot of focus in healthcare is around the delivery of food, but there's so much more to the food system. And so I'd love to hear more about how you see, first, what the Farm Bill is, and then secondly, how you see the Farm Bill fitting in with healthcare providers and why kind of healthcare should care.
Sure, absolutely. So the Farm Bill is our country's largest piece of agricultural legislation that we reauthorize roughly every 5 to 7 years in the United States. The first one was signed into law in 1933, around the time of the New Deal, when our country was coming out of the Great Depression, the Dust Bowl, really in an effort to boost agricultural prices and reduce surpluses. Over the course of time, it's changed a lot. It's grown immensely. In the 70s, food stamps were incorporated as a permanent part of the Farm Bill. And so at this point, it incorporates so many different types of programs that it's considered an omnibus legislation, meaning it addresses a lot of different interests and funds a lot of very different types of programs all together in one package. So some of the biggest titles include the nutrition title is by far the largest. So that includes funding for different nutrition assistance programs. SNAP, or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, is the largest. The second biggest title in terms of funding is crop insurance for producers, primarily designed towards some commodity producers in this country. Third largest is our commodity subsidy or commodity title, which subsidizes commodity crop production. And then the fourth largest is our conservation title, which funds some different programs to incentivize conservation on farmland. And then there are eight other types of titles or like categories of programs beyond that, such as horticulture, trade, et cetera. And I think that there are a lot of reasons why healthcare providers should care about the Farm Bill. And there are a lot of ways in which this omnibus legislation really affects health and the work of healthcare providers in this country. I think the first reason that comes to mind so often is the nutrition title and nutrition assistance, some of these programs addressing food insecurity and nutrition insecurity, which obviously are important for health. I think in the education that I provide, I really try to help make it come across that every penny that our country spends, you know, using our taxpayer dollars that we spend on subsidizing crop production and incentivizing conservation and, you know, supporting production of specialty crops and organics and all of that. These all affect, all of these programs affect what our farmers are growing and how they grow it, you know, what chemicals they're using, how they're marketed, and then what people have access to, what people are choosing to buy in the grocery store, or what they don't have access to. So I think it's really important, you know, for starters, that healthcare providers understand this major influence on our food supply and on dietary patterns in the country. And then to understand how we can make a positive impact based on some of those concerns. And I figure we'll probably come back to that in a few minutes. I know you also asked about food as medicine movement. I guess most broadly, I'd say the Farm Bill impacts food as medicine because so much of the food that we are for which we're incentivizing production in our country, ends up, these ingredients are really coming from commodities or ending up in ultra processed foods that are artificially cheap and abundant and prevalent. And so, at the risk of potentially sounding too negative, it's really kind of necessitating the growth in the food as medicine movement to help enhance access to healthy food and enhance skills around cooking and consuming healthy food. There is one particular program. So in the nutrition title, we have a program called GUSNIP, or the Gus Schumacher Nutrition Incentive Program, that's providing incentives for SNAP recipients to basically help their SNAP dollars go farther, something like doubling value of their SNAP benefits when they're purchasing maybe fruits and vegetables at a farmer's market or at a grocery store. And so that nutrition incentive program is fairly new over the last roughly decade. And in the last Farm Bill, I think it's really exciting that there was actually a little bit of funding set aside within that GUSNIP program for produce prescriptions, about $25 million for pilot produce prescriptions. So that enables physicians as healthcare providers to actually prescribe healthy food that their patients can then use those prescriptions to go purchase healthier food, particularly produce. And in this instance, these prescriptions are actually funded through the Farm Bill. So USDA dollars coming from federal taxpayer dollars. And that's really, I think, the first link that we've seen between the provision of healthcare and the Farm Bill in our country. Produce prescriptions are not unique to the Farm Bill necessarily, but again, this is really the first concrete connection that we've seen between USDA and the provision of healthcare. And so I'm really excited, particularly in the coming months, for some of the data around evaluation of those produce prescription programs to finally be publicly released, so we can see how utilization of healthcare and maybe costs associated with healthcare for participants in those produce prescription programs may be impacted by their participation. So I think that those are a couple of ways in which the Farm Bill impacts the food as medicine movement. And I'm certainly excited to see other kind of creative ways that healthcare providers and farmers are coming up with to find areas of overlap and to coordinate in program planning, implementation, and evaluation to continue to merge the sectors moving forward.
Thank you. That was a really helpful overview. And what I'm hearing you say is that, right, the Farm Bill is impacting the types of food we're growing and often foods used in food assistance, as well as funding some food assistance programs. And then the food as medicine movement is helping to connect people to those foods. And so what is grown really affects the supply and the foods available to people, especially people who maybe need it the most. We did talk a little bit about culinary medicine in your intro. I would love to hear how you see culinary medicine kind of fitting into this ecosystem.
So I guess one thought I would have about that is For those of us who work in this field and are teaching patients or health professional students or trainees or others about healthy cooking and sort of using that in our practice, I think one area of overlap here is thinking, giving some thought to how we're procuring the food that we're using when we're educating those audiences. So looking for ways to maybe partner with local farmers, whether we're in rural settings or urban settings. Urban farmers, maybe even like food hubs, if we need to be able to procure larger quantities of food. So using our dollars, those procurement dollars, to teach our culinary classes in ways that support local food systems, help to keep small farmers and family farmers who are not typically receiving most of the subsidies through the Farm Bill. So helping to keep them in business. That also provides a signal to our patients, to our students, our trainees about what is really important in terms of our food procurement. So we're kind of also able to find ways to incorporate education around food and farming systems through the delivery of our culinary medicine when we're able to partner with farms in that way. Another area, I guess, is thinking about areas of overlap between culinary medicine and produce prescriptions, which could mean, you know, the GUSNIP program. Maybe we're targeting some of those lower resourced communities who might be in SNAP and eligible for GUSNIP. So maybe there are ways to integrate produce prescription programs with culinary medicine. Maybe they're at the same time, or thinking about sort of a transition between the two as participants are gaining culinary skills. Maybe they don't need as sort of an intensive or an acute intervention like a produce prescription, and something like a culinary medicine program, the skill building can meet their needs. So I think in terms of program delivery and even evaluation, I think we can incorporate practice and research in that space, the overlap between the two programs. I guess, you know, maybe one other area is there are a variety of programs in the Farm Bill focused on marketing of local agriculture products. Like there's a program called LAMP. I believe it's the Local Agriculture Marketing Program. And that is really to help those small family farmers who don't always have access to the same channels for marketing and selling their products as some of the really big agribusinesses do. So maybe there are ways to help better coordinate those marketing efforts and local procurement with healthcare institutions and culinary medicine programs to help market products and incorporate those products into culinary classes and even connect the recipients, the program participants, with foods from some of those local farms. So those are a few ideas. I'm sure that there are a lot more ideas for areas of coordination as well.
That's really helpful. And I definitely feel I better understand how the Farm Bill can influence food as medicine, culinary medicine, and kind of nutrition support at large. What can other people do to get involved with this work?
Well, I think a first step certainly is always learning. So joining this podcast is a great way to kind of start. I think there are a lot of other really great resources to learn more. Some that I often suggest when I present on this topic are reports from the Congressional Research Service. If you really want to dig into what programs are funded by the Farm Bill and how they've changed over time, how much money they receive, if you want to learn more about subsidies and how they're being allocated, I think the Environmental Working Group has some great information in their databases. A couple of other organizations that have helpful information about the Farm Bill are National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, or NSAC, and also Farm Action. I've relied on their information a lot when I've been doing research. Of course, USDA, our Department of Agriculture, their website will also have information both kind of reports and summary information, as well as very robust databases around like who's engaged in farming, what crops we're producing as a country, et cetera. So I think learning is very important. I think also educating and publishing are important. And when I speak to healthcare professionals, I really want to call this out, because I think we can engage in peer-reviewed research. That might mean conducting research maybe based on data around participation in USDA programs, maybe even tying those to health outcomes, dietary behaviors, grocery purchases. And so there are a lot of different publicly available sources of data and information that, you know, whether we work in academia, or maybe we're in consulting, maybe working for nonprofits and doing research, I think healthcare professionals can be involved in research and help to share, help to add to the evidence base around what programs are effective in promoting good health, or on the other hand, what programs we really think need to change to better promote health. And then even if not research, I think writing op-eds and writing commentaries can be important ways to help share our stories and our perspectives around how food and farming are really connected to health, either positive or negatively. I think many of us may be involved in teaching. And so we can be teaching our students, incorporating content around the Farm Bill and food policy and sustainable agriculture into our education. You know, I mentioned some examples around procurement. Some of us may have influence in terms of institutional food service, so we can try to have a positive impact over where foods are being sourced. And again, trying to keep dollars local and support our local farmers. We are all, of course, consumers ourselves, so we can be conscious around where we're buying foods. We can teach our own children, you know, our friends and our community members. We can find ways to further integrate into the food as medicine movement. And again, think about kind of creative ways to integrate the healthcare services that we're offering, whether in culinary medicine or produce prescriptions or others, and some of these sustainable food programs and local food producers. And then certainly always opportunities for advocacy, whether at the local level or at the federal level. So looking for ways to submit comments, maybe on proposed rules and regulations around agriculture, writing or calling your members of Congress, particularly in this big Farm Bill reauthorization year. Right now, the House and Senate Ag Committees are developing their draft versions of the next Farm Bill. So I'd say people who are listening to this can sort of follow along and get an idea about what is being proposed for inclusion in the next Farm Bill. And then if you have ideas, if you have concerns, definitely call your members of Congress or write to your members of Congress to be able to provide your important perspectives as experts in nutrition and healthcare and maybe even food systems more broadly.
Thank you. That was really helpful. And I'll definitely be sure to link some of the resources you discussed in notes of the podcast. And just my last question, I know you wrote a book, The Farm Bill, A Citizen's Guide. Where can people get the book and kind of listen to more of your speaking and lessons?
Thanks, Olivia. Yes. So my publisher, Island Press, offers the book on their website. I know they have an ebook version as well. It's also widely available at other booksellers, bookstores like a Barnes & Noble and others like that. There are also a lot of local bookstores. I live in the DC area. I know a few bookstores here have it. I've worked with a lot of universities around the country, and these universities, thinking like Johns Hopkins and Harvard and Princeton and some others, sell through their bookstores on campus. I've gotten a lot of interest lately in producing an audiobook, and I actually just emailed my co-author and my publisher a couple days ago to ask again about possibly developing an audiobook. And then when I do give talks at different conferences and venues around the country, I do try to offer copies of the book there as well. So if anybody is interested in bringing the book to their institution, their university, their setting, I'm happy to talk with them, connect them with my publisher. I think it can be a really helpful resource for anyone looking to learn more about the Farm Bill.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Christina. Really appreciate you talking with me today, and I look forward to hearing more about the Farm Bill.
Okay, thanks again, Olivia.